A year ago this week, the American city of Boston was rocked by a bombing attack at the finish line of its prestigious marathon. A massive manhunt ensued that saw the unprecedented move to shut down the entire city, a first in terms of responding to such an event, and it was quickly dubbed a terrorist attack. Three people were killed and more than 260 injured as a result of the attacks. But that hasn't stopped locals and visitors alike flocking back to the city for this year's Boston Marathon, a record number. Jenna Russell is a reporter with the Boston Globe newspaper. She's also co-author of a new book called The Long Mile Home, Boston Under Attack, The City's Courageous Recovery and the Epic Hunt for Justice. Welcome to Saturday Extra, Jenna.
Thank you so much, Norman. It's great to be here.
So I'll ask you the question that no doubt everybody asked you to start off with. Where were you when the bombs went off?
You know, I was actually not at the marathon, nor was I in the Globe newsroom. I was working on a story away from the city, and so the news filtered to me as it did to many, many people here, overheard people talking about it. I could pick up very quickly that there was a sense of panic and alarm, and turned to my laptop computer, to our own website, boston.com, where little bits and pieces of information were filtering in minute by minute, and it was a very confusing, very frightening kind of feeling to have.
We just set context here. I mean, the Boston Marathon before these bombings was still a big deal on the international marathon map.
It is. It's one of the best known, and I would say probably best loved marathons. It has a long and really fascinating history. It's always been just an incredible day in the city of Boston. It's a day that's a holiday in the city. People are off from school. They're off from work. Hundreds of thousands of people flock to the course of the marathon. It's the beginning of spring here, and it's usually the beginning of the baseball season, and people, the mood in the city is just incredibly light and buoyant.
Winter depression in Boston starts to lift.
Finally, yeah.
And is it always finished on Boston Street in the Back Bay area?
Yeah, it always finishes there in the heart of Back Bay, right next to the historic Boston Public Library and historic Trinity Church and Copley Square. It's a beautiful spot. And the marathon finish line, blue and yellow, across the street there is one of the most beloved landmarks there.
And it's extraordinary. I mean, it's terrible for the three people who were killed, obviously, and the 260 injured. But given the number of people there, it's extraordinary that more weren't hurt.
It is astonishing. And I think people are still, there's almost a permanent sense of disbelief that more people were not killed. And a huge part of that is the medical response. We have so many. We're so fortunate to have world-class hospitals here, a half dozen of them within a couple of miles of the finish line of the marathon. And there's a medical operation at the marathon finish line itself that was in place that day. And so it's just extraordinary that so many lives were able to be saved.
And the aftermath for those people, we'll come to the story of the day in a moment, but the aftermath for those 260 people or so?
Yes, the injured. There's such a range of injuries, as you can imagine.
And we should say that these were two pressure cooker bombs that went off within minutes of each other.
That's right. Pressure cookers packed with nails, ball bearings, fragments of metal, stuffed into backpacks that were left abandoned in two spots on the sidewalk about a block apart. As you said, three people were killed, about 15 others each lost a leg, or in a couple of cases, both legs as a result. What you saw there was a pattern of injuries that experts will say is kind of classic IED or improvised device.
Where the pressure wave is at a low level.
That's right. That's right.
So it took them 48 hours to identify the two perpetrators, who turned out to be the two perpetrators, Shahar Zanahev and his older brother Tamerlan.
That's right. They figured out pretty quickly that what they needed to do was launch an incredibly intensive review of all of the surveillance and news video that was being collected at the finish line. As you can imagine, many, many people with cameras, still and video photographs, and then in this commercial retail district, you've got just a huge number of cameras that were recording video that day. So they collected everything that they could. They set up a warehouse on the waterfront where they could convert it to a format that they could view it, and then just sat and looked at to this video for countless hours around the clock, looking for something, looking for anything that would look out of place, that would jump out at them and alert them to somebody who wasn't acting like everybody else in the crowd. And that's exactly what they eventually found.
I mean, it was extraordinary. And then how long did it take for them to put the city into lockdown?
Well, they had an internal debate that went on for a couple of days about whether they should release the video to the public and hope for tips that would help them identify the suspects, or whether they should continue their investigation internally until they could pinpoint who these people were. They ultimately decided to release the video about 5 p.m. on that Thursday. And then it was the next morning that the governor made the decision to lock down the city.
How controversial was that? I mean, I was in Boston 2 months beforehand, actually very near Boston, just on Boston Street, in fact, when you had that big nor'easter, which effectively locked down the city. I mean, it was extraordinary. There was nobody on the streets. Nothing happened. There was no subway, no public transport, and very few cars. No cars, in fact.
Yes, you may have been there during one of the storms where this was kind of tested out, and they had done it once or twice during the course of the winter. So they felt that it had been effective in those cases, obviously a very different situation. And they rolled it out on this day, and it was extremely controversial. Not as much in the moment when there was a genuine sense of fear that had pervaded the city at the thought that these people were out there somewhere. Afterwards, I think people began to look back in retrospect and wonder whether that was completely necessary over the geographic span that it was, in fact, enacted. And I think the opinion is still mixed, but I've been out on the streets recently talking to people about all this a year later, and you find a lot of people who are very grateful that the police were able to do what they did, and you find others, of course, who question it, and I think that's healthy, and that discussion is still going on.
And then there was this extraordinary shootout with the two brothers, and has that ever been properly described and explained? I mean, did the younger one, Jahar, actually kill his brother by running over him in trying to escape that, well, in fact, effectively escaping that shootout?
I think the consensus is, based from our reporting and the sources we've been able to talk to, that most likely the older brother, Tamerlan, was shot in the shootout, probably multiple times, and then he was run over and dragged some distance by his brother, who was escaping the scene. And it's probably not entirely clear what was the fatal injury.
And then extraordinarily, he manages to escape this cordon. There's the shootout, there's tens of thousands of police on the streets, and he escapes. And but they localize him to Watertown. How did he manage to escape that particular event?
I mean, if you go to Watertown and you walk this route, it is just really kind of unimaginable how things played out. He sped away in the car. He very quickly figured out that he needed to abandon the car. He left the car, and he ended up hiding in a backyard that was 0.2 miles from where he abandoned the car, probably a total of 20 houses distance. And he was so close to where all of this had gone on, and yet throughout the course of that day-long search, they did not search that backyard, they did not search that boat, and he managed to remain undetected throughout the course of that day on Friday.
And he lay bleeding there and was extracted. Now, what do we actually know? I mean, there's the suggestions that Jahar and the two Tsarnaev boys were linked to Al-Qaeda. He denies that. He says he was, you know, influenced by Islamic extremists. The word is that they were planning to do an attack on New York. The older brother has been linked to other killings. What picture has emerged of these two, particularly the older brother?
Some of my colleagues here have done a great deal of reporting on that, and it's still not a picture that is entirely focused, but we learned a lot about the family and their decision to come to America and the dreams that they brought with them for their children here. And they started out with their children excelling in school and with high hopes for living the American dream, I guess you might say, all of which started to fall apart. The family really disintegrated over a period of years. The marriage between the parents fell apart. The promise of the children also ebbed away. The older brother, Tamerlan, dropped out of college. He was unemployed. He was really adrift by many accounts, increasingly angry, increasingly isolated, and increasingly interested in extremists who he researched on the internet. I think there's conflicting views of how his younger brother became involved, and how much it was his brother's influence that drew him into this world. But it really becomes a picture of a very sad downward spiral that I'm sure, I would guess, no one around them could have dreamed just how far they could have gone down.
And this link with these three other killings, has that been proven?
Well, it's a bit of a frustrating situation here. Local authorities have not said very much. We have a friend of Tamerlan Tsarnaev who was interviewed in Florida by authorities.
And then was shot.
Yeah.
Tardashev.
Exactly. He allegedly wrote a sort of confession that said that he and Tamerlan had been involved in those other killings. No one has seen the details of that, but I think most people at this point have come to believe that Tamerlan probably was involved in those killings of those three young men.
And then you've got a little bit of an irony here, is that in a probably the most liberal state in the Union, they're calling for the death penalty.
It is an irony, and it's kind of, it really is quite interesting in terms of the trial, which is now scheduled for November, and what will happen. Massachusetts is one of the most liberal places in the country, and you will find much less support for the death penalty here than almost anywhere else in the country. I think we did a poll, a Boston Globe poll, in September that found that just one-third of the state's residents favored the death penalty for Jahar Tsarnaev, and the rest were undecided or opposed it. So it's possible that although this is a place where people most certainly feel the most affected by these horrific crimes, it also may be a place where his defense team feels he would have a greater chance of avoiding the death penalty. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
And his defense team is quite experienced. They've managed to even get the Unabomber off the death penalty, or certainly delayed it.
Yes, yes. I think that we'll have to see. The evidence in this case is, without question, overwhelming. So their best hope may be simply to have him avoid being put to death.
Just finally, Jenna Russell, record numbers going, you know, applying to do the Boston Marathon this year. The Boston Red Sox are doing something at Fenway Park, which is just probably 2 kilometres from where the bomb took place. Just give us a flavour of what's happening and going to happen on the weekend.
There's an incredible amount of excitement in the city. It certainly will be a difficult time for many people. It will bring back a lot of memories. But at the same time, people are so encouraged, and it's such an affirming thing to see everyone want to come out. They've had record numbers of people register for the marathon. They've expanded the marathon so more people can run. They have a special race for the survivors and their families, a shorter race, of course. They'll have an event to honor the victims before the actual marathon. It will be very emotional, but I think what it says is that our city in some ways is stronger than it's ever been, and we've all come together in different ways. And I hope that people will come away from April feeling a reassurance and a sense of forward motion that is very important to all of us.
Well, we'll be watching on Monday when the marathon takes place. Jenna Russell, thank you very much for joining us here on Saturday Extra.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Jenna Russell, who's co-author of Long Mile Home, Boston Under Attack, The City's Courageous Recovery and the Epic Hunt for Justice. And who's the publisher, Jenna?
It's Dutton, which is a division of Penguin.
Okay, thanks very much indeed. You're listening to Saturday Extra here on RN with me, Norman Swan.